From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
Harry's Ghost by Talmadge Powell. Harry's ghostly visitations became the focus of Miss Annie's unhappy life. She anticipated his ectoplasm with the breathlessness of a schoolgirl, and if several evenings passed without a sign from him, she was more miserably lonely than before. Now that she was in the twilight of her life, she'd had nothing but memories bleak and barren of all the years B.H. before Harry. It could have been so different, she would think bitterly. Certainly no spot on earth should have been more conducive to happiness than the Southern California, Pasadena to be precise, into which she had been born. It was the Eden in those days, the irresistible lure that had drawn like flies to the honey pot, with the spoiling millions who had cut the flower-quilted hillsides, smothered the orange groves in concrete, piled the spaghetti tangled morass of freeways for the insane rushing multitudes, and blanketed the friendliest sun on earth with a poisonous curtain of smog. Those days. A lazy interurban between Pasadena and downtown Los Angeles. Strollers window shopping on Colorado Avenue, where the bus station was furnished with overstuffed couches and chairs like a friendly living room. Radishes 2 cents a bunch, avocados for a nickel. Families dining on the front porch of a house that had been converted into a neighborhood cafe. A war between oil companies reducing gasoline prices to nothing for the guzzling Stutz or Duesenberg or Cadillac. A morning tobogganing on the pristine snow in the mountains and driving past olive and date groves on your way home that evening to the perfume of flowers and the welcoming nod of palm trees. But only in retrospect was Miss Annie aware. The shadow of Papa, from her first squalling breath to the end of his days, had been her reality. Why couldn't he have died early on, that martinet she called Papa, when she still had time to realize that she too was a person? But he hadn't, and she hadn't, and she couldn't at last explain how it all happened, this process she called her life. The years had somehow simply crept away in his shadow, in the sound of his voice, cautioning, warning of the evils of the world, opening her eyes to the filth of the young males, claiming her time and attention, making her aware of how much she owed him, how dutiful she must be, how he was poor, dear Papa. And when he had finally died, it had been too late, and her reward had been endless hours of days in which to dwell in the past. Her only security, 3 small houses in an old section. Life had certainly changed for Miss Annie after the advent of Harry. It was no longer a dull gray abyss. Nothing in this 3-dimensional realm could equal the experience of having a real-life ghost for one's own, especially one as nice as Harry, and only the confirmed addict of a hallucinatory drug might have comprehended Miss Annie's racking anxieties during those periods when Harry refused to appear. Then, just as Miss Annie was about to succumb to despair, the first swirl of ectoplasm would glimmer in the narrow, dark hallway or in a corner of the kitchen. Miss Annie would rise from her inner ashes, blood stirring in her old stiff veins, the most delicious fright and fascination searing through her brittle bones and wrinkled parchment tissues. Neither her reaction nor Harry's existence perturbed her in the least. It was inconceivable that anyone could fail to respond to such a dear as Harry. And on the second point, Harry's existence, to Miss Annie's way of thinking, was no more surprising than this year's rebirth of the tiger lily that had died last autumn. Harry, she would say through the pulse beating in her thin, bony neck. Then her dentures would click as her soft, chiding smile belied her sternly wagging finger. "You've been a very naughty young man, Harry, staying away so long. I was on the point of moving out, like the others. How would you like that?" The quick shimmering of ectoplasm hinted that he wouldn't like it at all. He partially succeeded in materializing there in the dim hallway, a quivering, uncertain image of a tall, thin, clean-cut young man with dark hair and the imprint of deep sorrow on his gaunt face. He was trying to tell her something. He was always trying to tell her. She stood with eyes enrapt, her heart beating in wild excitement. From crown to toe, she came to tingling life. Emotions long banked like embers of half-forgotten fires sputtered and flamed. She ached with a desire to know his secret. But she was in the same moment torn with a fear that if he ever managed to reveal it, he would go away forever. "Harry?" she could barely whisper above her shortness of breath. "What is it like? Is there day and night? Cold and hot? Harry, please!" But his grip weakened on forces beyond her own space-time continuum, and his already fuzzy image melted and slipped away, until there was just a wisp of ectoplasm coiling and writhing a dozen feet from her face. "Oh, Harry! Harry!" she sobbed faintly, and then the hallway was quite empty. Miss Annie returned to limp awareness of her surroundings. With a petulant little sigh, she turned toward the living room. It hadn't been a good visitation, not at all. If Harry would only try as hard to get here as she expended the effort to bring him. She started slightly as the front door chime sounded. Frowning at the unexpected event of someone calling on her, she crossed the living room. She opened the door on a tall, lean young man who was dressed in dark denim slacks and a blue pea jacket. "Miss Annie Loxton?" She nodded, struck by the strange sense of familiarity aroused by his gaunt face and shock of dark hair. "I'm Horace Grimshaw," he said. "Harry's brother." That explained it. She expelled a tiny breath. Peered at closely, he wasn't Harry at all. Though similar on the surface, the cast of Horace's features, the charisma contrasted with Harry. Horace was tougher, that was the word. Harder bitten, more capable of meeting the world's cruelty head on. "If you don't mind, Miss Annie," he was saying, "I'd like to talk to you." "Of course," she said quickly, "do come in." He surveyed the modest living room with a glance as he entered. This was the first time he'd been in the house where Harry had died, and a tightness tugged the corner of his mouth. "Please sit down, Mr. Grimshaw. Would you like some coffee?" "No, thanks. Just some talk about Harry, if it's okay." She nodded, watching him sit down in a barrel-backed chair near the window. He was bigger bone than Harry. Big knuckles, big wrists thrusting a half-inch from the sleeves of the worn seaman's jacket as he bent his arms and rested his elbows on the chair arms. "I didn't know that Harry had a brother," she said. "We haven't seen each other in a long while. I was working on a scabby island freighter in the Celebes and Bandices when news of his death finally reached me." She slipped into a chair opposite him, blue-veined, chicken-clawed old hands folded tightly in her lap. She saw the grief darkness in his face, and she felt she should say something, but she didn't know what would be entirely appropriate. The dull gray years, devoid of human fellowship and communication, had hardly trained her in the art of consoling a saddened stranger. He pushed aside his remote moment, lifting his eyes. "They say that Harry killed himself." "Yes," she murmured. "Here in this house, in the basement, they say he hanged himself in the basement. Please, Mr. Grimshaw, it happened weeks ago. It's all over and done." His weather-tanned young face studied her a moment. His lips had the look of being chiseled from ice. For an instant, he was just a little frightening. "I knew my brother, Miss Annie. I don't believe he would have done such a thing. I don't honestly think he had the guts." Her watery blue eyes glanced away. She was beginning to dislike Harry's brother. To talk of Harry in such terms as if it was Horace who possessed all the intestinal fortitude in the family. "You rented the house to him?" Horace said. "Yes," Miss Annie nodded. "To him and his wife. She left him shortly afterward for another man. I think he continued on in a bachelor existence with a cleaning woman, and twice a week it was she who found him. The cleaning woman, I mean. Later, Harry's ex-wife came and claimed their things." "Do you know where she is now?" "No, Mr. Grimshaw, such affairs are not my business. She had a legal paper. She took their belongings. That's the last I've seen of her." He assessed Miss Annie's tone. "Good riddance," he suggested. She refolded her hands. "If you wish to put it that way," she said stiffly, "I think your brother was a far finer person than his wife was." "Were you here when she took the things away?" "Naturally, and so was a detective. I rented the house partially furnished, and I had to watch after my own things. Later." "Yes, Miss Annie?" She straightened her thin shoulders an inch. "Well, the next two tenants didn't stay long. They claimed Harry was still here, making little noises in the plaster and sometimes glowing in the dark. Well, not glowing exactly. Kind of a shower of sparks. Like those children's toys, sparklers." He waited, and she felt the need to break the sudden silence. She stifled her sense of aggravation with him and forced herself to speak calmly. "I didn't believe it myself, Mr. Grimshaw. But the tenants kept running, so to speak, and I had to have my rents. My father left me three little cottages like this one. It's all I have. So if I could not keep this one rented, I decided to move in myself and rent out the one in which I'd lived. It worked out nicely. Good tenants in the other places, and I like it here very much." "Even with Harry around?" She bristled inwardly at the faint scorn in his voice, but before she could tell him how much she liked having Harry around, he was on a new tack. "My brother worked for an outfit called Happy Havens, I believe. An executive director," Miss Annie said proudly, "and a wonderful organization it is, too. They build and support nursing homes for helpless senior citizens without kin or money." "They'd conducted a big fund drive just before Harry's death," Horace said. "Is that correct?" "Yes, that is true. And $40,000 showed up short when all the collections were in and the kitty totaled up?" Miss Annie looked at the pulsing blue veins on her tight knuckles and wished Horace would go away. Remorse over the $40,000 in embezzled funds was what had killed Harry. Too nice, too fine, too decent and honest to go against his own conscience, no matter what had been his reasons, in his once-in-a-lifetime moment of weakness and temptation. "The police tell me, Miss Annie, that they never did recover the $40,000. Could Harry have reconciled with his wife? She's quite a beauty, I hear. Could she have talked to him, coaxed him, worn him down, conned him into taking the money?" "A Jezebel," Miss Annie whispered. "Filthy creature of her sex." "What was that, Miss Annie?" "I think," she said, lifting her eyes, "that Harry was deeply infatuated with her at one time, but I think he got over her when she left." "You saw him often?" "Whenever I collected the rents." "But you noticed a change in him?" "Yes. He seemed harried, absent-minded, when I first rented them the house. After she left, he seemed to find a sense of relief. His color was better. He gained a little weight." He cut a side glance. "You seem to have noticed a lot, Miss Annie." "I was fond of your brother, Mr. Grimshaw. He didn't treat me like a prune-faced landlady. In all my life." Again he waited, and she peeked, wondering how she could be so open to a perfect stranger. "I won't trouble you with the details of my life, Mr. Grimshaw. Sufficient to say that I was a shy, sickly, ugly little girl. My mother died, and I never escaped the shadow of my father, who rather despised me and felt that I was incapable of coping with the world. To sum up, it hasn't been much of a life, and your brother was one of the rare people who looked at me and saw a person who seemed to understand. She broke off. Horace, unlike his brother, lacked that particular empathy. Horace's eyes held a nearly hidden chill as if he found her soft voice repugnant. "If there's nothing more, Mr. Grimshaw." But before she could rise and dismiss him, he said, "There is more. A lot more. In seaman's language. I'm not... But I'd better not use my seaman's language, Miss Annie. Let's just say that I'm not satisfied with a lot of things." "As?" "The note my brother was supposed to have left. For one thing, the suicide note, saying he had stolen the money, realized later that he was bound to get caught, and simply couldn't stand the prospect of scandal, shame, and prison." The chair creaked slightly under his shifting weight. "The note was typewritten, Miss Annie. Anyone can type a note." "But it had his signature." "Which gets us to the nitty-gritty," he said. "If Harry didn't take the money, or write the note, then it had to be someone who had both access to the money and to Harry's signature, so it could be copied." "You're dismissing his wife?" "For the moment. The other angle narrows down the suspects to people with or close to Harry, or to Happy Havens. How many people were there in executive directorships or posts above that?" "Three at the time, I think. Harry and a Mr. Philbin and Mr. James Fellows, who lives third house down the street," Miss Annie said. "Harry and Mr. Fellows used to take turns driving their cars and riding to work together." "And while they're riding along," Horace said, "this guy Fellows, sick to death with the boring details and fawning over contributors and the low pay that goes with every charity job, this guy decides to grab a big fat plum while he's got the chance to use the trusting dumb cluck on the car seat beside him for a fall guy. But the police do their routine and are promptly swamped with a dozen, 100, 1,000,000 other crimes. Sure, they look for the missing money. They figure every place Harry might have put it. They go over a crack here in the house he occupied. But he's hanging by the neck in his own basement, and a note with his signature says he did it. And the missing money is another unanswered detail in an already cluttered file. But they question the others." "For hours," Horace agreed. "Probably search their premises too, and no doubt really put the ex-wife over the coals. But the question of the money remains, and if I knew that soft sister Harry, he would have gone crawling back with it instead of killing himself." Miss Annie thought. "Philbin?" She knew him only through Happy Haven's publicity releases that had appeared in the newspapers. A frail little man, very old, very gray, far too weak to have hanged Harry. Fellows? James Fellows? A far different case indeed. He had been here a time or two when she dropped by for the rent. Big, jovial, too hearty, that was Fellows. The backslapper, the glad hander. Oh, by all means, now that she came to think of it, Fellows, a big, broad smile for big contributors, whose wealth he secretly envied. An oogling phony and four-flusher, her instincts had told her the first time she'd met him. "A penny, Miss Annie," Horace's words nudged into her thoughts. "For my thoughts?" She rose stiffly and crossed to the window. She slipped back the drape and looked at the fellow's house down the street. Modest, like the rest of them on the block. But the lawn needed cutting, and there was Mrs. Fellows coming out the front door. Sex-pop blonde in those dreadful hot pants. Cheap and vulgar. Crossing to the fellow's car, which was too flashy for Mr. Fellows' salary. Miss Annie recognized her suspicion as just that. A suspicion. But it was possible. Fellows was cunning enough and strong enough to have pulled it off. Fellows could have taken the money, and before the theft was discovered, he could have strolled over for a chat with Harry that unspeakable evening. Fellows could easily have overpowered an unsuspecting Harry, knocked him out, carried him unconscious to the basement. When he departed, Fellows could have left the forged suicide note, which he'd prepared in advance, and Harry slowly turning left and slowly turning right, his neck secured by the rope to the overhead water pipe. Then Fellows simply waits, bides his time until the heat was off, as the late movies put it. In due time, Fellows manages to get himself fired at Happy Havens and quite naturally fades from sight with his blonde and the $40,000 bought with Harry's life. Miss Annie didn't know she was biting her knuckles until Horace tapped her shoulder and said sharply, "Miss Annie, what is this you're mumbling about Harry being here? About Harry trying to tell you?" She turned, tears in irregular course on the bleached crocodile leather of her face. "He is here, Mr. Grimshaw. Harry really is here. If you don't believe me, ask the previous tenants, the ones who rented the house after he was hanged." Horace was stilled for a moment. He crept a glance over his shoulder. "I don't see him, Miss Annie." "Oh, for heaven's sake," she shrilled, jerking away from his touch. "You're like so many other people. To you, I'm just an old prune-faced, pixelated now, old, you know, a little cracked, imagining things." "Well, I don't imagine a blessed thing, you foolish and cruel young man. I don't see Harry either when he isn't there, only when he is able to materialize. But not with creaking in the walls, not as a dime store sparkler in the dark. Not with me, young fellow. Harry and I understand each other, something that you would never comprehend. With understanding, Harry and I have almost bridged the gap." She hobbled over to a chair, feeling suddenly weak. "Miss Annie." "No, just go. You don't believe, and..." "But maybe I do, Miss Annie." His shadow fell across her chair. "I've seen some kooky things in the Celebes, things I can't account for, things science can't explain, Miss Annie. Let me come back. If my brother's present, you owe me the privilege of coming back." She didn't want him to come back. She didn't want him around. She was content to be alone in the house with Harry's ghost. She drew her head to one side, looking up at him from the corners of her eyes. He seemed quite serious, not making fun of her at all. "Harry was all the kin I had, Miss Annie. Parents dead, no wife, no real friends, just some guys and chicks I knew knocking around in the South Seas. Nobody but Harry, Miss Annie." "Very well," she relented reluctantly. "You may come and see him, if he appears." "Does he favor certain times?" "Not precisely. He doesn't call by appointment." "Certain places here in the house?" "The hallway, the kitchen, and the basement where he was hanged." "Murdered, Miss Annie." "Murdered," she said. They sat quietly in the confines of the basement, with its earthen smell and feel of dusty cobwebs. It was the second evening in a row that they'd sat here for 2-hour stretches, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock each night. Thinking back over the visitations, Miss Annie had concluded that Harry favored the hour of 9. It was the hour, the coroner had officially reported, when Harry's life had been surrendered to the length of rope and water pipe. They sat on 2 old kitchen chairs that had been stored in the basement, just the 2 of them. Miss Annie near the foot of the narrow, steep stairs, and Horace a few feet away. There was no sign of Harry, and nothing broke the silence until Horace remarked, "Not like a regular seance, Miss Annie. No tilting table, no joining of hands and calling up the spirits." "I don't believe in such humbug, Horace."
"Neither do I.
Now and then, a being such as Harry is forced to return. That's what I believe. And dishes fly off the shelves to make a poltergeist presence known." "It's happened in some well-authenticated instances," Horace agreed, "with even hard-headed cops and newspaper reporters on hand to witness the knockings." Miss Annie's silence dropped the subject. In a moment she stirred, watching the brief emergence of Horace's hard-bitten young face in the glow of his cigarette. "Horace?"
"Yes, Miss Annie."
"Was there bad blood between you and Harry?"
"Why do you ask, Miss Annie?"
"Not sure, except that he doesn't seem inclined to appear while you're present."
"No, Miss Annie, nothing like that. Frankly, I used to make him out a sissy sometimes, but I think that deep down he knew that I did admire other qualities he had. Then we shall wait. Right on, Miss Annie. He finished his cigarette and ground it under his heel. It's after 9, Miss Annie. I don't think... Shh! It was a softly barked expletive, cutting him short, freezing him in his chair. I feel that strange warmth, Horace, that tingling of life, that sensation, quite unlike any other I've ever known. There, Horace! Near the water heater! Horace stumbled to his feet, toppling his chair. In the dim corner at which Miss Annie was pointing, the first thin tendril of ectoplasm threshed like the body of a headless, silvery, glowing snake. The manifestation eeled and crawled its way through the space-time warp. It grew, eddied, steadied it. It strained itself into a shape shimmering unsteadily. "Harry," Miss Annie said to the image, "your brother Horace has come all the way from the South Seas to see you." The image quivered a greeting to Horace, and Horace, supporting himself with one hand against a brick pillar, got his sea legs under him. "Hello, Harry," Horace said. "I'm sorry it has to be like this, under these circumstances." Harry darkened Sharon Horace's sentiment. Horace had strength to push away from the basement support. "I want to help you, Harry. I know it must be hell, trapped the way you are," Horace said. Harry brightened perceptibly. "Okay," Horace said on a deep breath. "I know you can't stick around long at a time, so let's hit the point. You can move up and down, and you can move side to side. I've got some questions. Move up and down for a yes answer, side to side for a no. Can do?" Harry moved up and down fitfully. "Swell," Horace said. "First off, were you murdered?" "Yes," Harry replied. "By your wife?" "No. By someone at Happy Havens who wanted to steal money safely, using you for a patsy." "Yes," Harry answered with a quick up-down bob of his assembly reflection. "Was it James Fellows?" "Yes, yes, yes." Miss Annie was drawing to her feet, breathless spectator, her gaze dashing from brother to brother. "Fellows is now just waiting his chance to leave without suspicion," Horace pressed on, "taking the $40,000 with him." "Yes," Harry replied. "You must get around in a brand new way nowadays," Horace said. "Walls can't stop you. Have you looked in on the Fellowses?" "Yes." "Do you know where he's got the money hidden?" "Yes." Horace paused, taking breath. Harry could signal only positive or negative responses, and Horace spent a moment framing his question. "Is the money stashed in a safety deposit box?" "No." "Bus station locker, maybe," Horace said. "No." "In his house?" "Yes, yes." "None of the usual hiding places," Horace mused himself, "or the cops would have found it." "Horace," Miss Annie remarked, "Harry is slipping away. He's barely hanging on. I can tell." "Harry, stick with us," Horace pleaded. "It's all the furniture were taken out of the room. Would the money still be in there?" "Yes." "In the attic?" "No." "Basement?" "No." "In the walls?" "No." Horace looked a bit helplessly at Miss Annie. "What other parts of a house?" He suddenly bit the words off, snapped his fingers, and asked, "The floor, Harry?" "Yes." "He spread the money and hid it with an inlay of fresh tile?" "No," and again no, as if Horace were the biggest dummy on the high seas. "Then the carpet," Horace said. "Sure. Fellows just loosened the edge of the carpet, rolled it back, spread the money, and then refastened the wall-to-wall carpeting." "Yes." "In capitals. A bob from floor to partially through the ceiling. Then the movement became a swirl, and the swirl a vortex, and the vortex was sucked into empty space." Harry was gone, and a silence came to the basement. Miss Annie felt Horace's touch on her arm. They looked at each other in the dimness filtering down the narrow stairs. Then silently they started up, Miss Annie in the lead. When they were halfway up, Horace remarked,
Somehow we've got to figure a way to get the police to roll back every inch of floor covering in the fellow's house. Can't very well tell them a ghost told us to do so. No, we can't, Miss Annie agreed. She struggled to the top of the stairs, reaching for the door jamb. We'll figure a way, Horace said confidently, even if I have to sneak into the fellow's house when they're away and call the cops from there, after I've uncovered the money. And the money will put the guilt where it belongs. It surely will, Horace said, Miss Annie. And that will certainly balance whatever cosmic forces we're dealing with, don't you see? Harry is trapped where he is. But when we restore the cosmic balance, it should release Harry forever. Framed in the doorway at the top of the stairs, Miss Annie stopped and turned. What is this you're saying, Horace? A couple of stair treads below her, he looked up at her wiry figure. I'm an amateur at this sort of thing. Exercising ghosts, getting messages from the great beyond, he admitted. But we can be sure of one thing. Harry is stuck. And Harry is tormented with a need to see his murderer brought to justice. And while he was visible to us, he gave me the strongest impression that justice for his murderer would complete the equation, put things in balance. He was trying to let me, his brother, know that it was the one way I could help him get unstuck. I'm certain of that. Justice for his murderer, Miss Annie murmured. And Harry is chased away for good? Released, Miss Annie, Horace corrected. He'll never bother you again, or chase away another tenant. I'm sorry, Horace, Miss Annie said in that instant that she put out her hands and pushed them with all her wiry old strength. She saw the look of surprise on his face as Horace went over backward and fell all the way to the bottom, bumping and banging. She flinched when his head struck the bottom step, and he came to rest in an awkward pile of outflung arms and twisted legs. She slipped down the stairs quickly. She'd expect at the very least that the fall would stun him, give her the advantage, offer her time enough to grab the hand axe from the tool cabinet and finish the job. But as she knelt beside him, she saw that the most, not the least, had happened. He was dead. His skull had cracked and was seeping red. Now, all that remained was the burial of Horace here in the basement. He had no relatives, no friends. He was a stranger in the city for whom no one would come asking. No one would ever know. Then, still in her kneeling position beside Horace, she sensed a presence. She turned her head a few inches, and in the further corner of the basement she saw the first spark, a little burst of stardust against the darkness. Harry, she said, rising slowly and reaching out entreating hands, I simply had to do it. I couldn't take a chance that Horace was right, that you'd go away if Fellows was brought to justice. I'd die, Harry, before I'd risk the destruction of the only relationship I ever had. Her words faltered. The nice, strange warmth had failed to come. Instead, a breath of interspatial zero oozed through the basement. And she knew, as the form before her materialized, the full truth flowed suddenly through her mind. This wasn't Harry. This was Horace, trapped hellishly in cosmic imbalance. This was a Horace transformed to raw wrath and a dark, boundless thirst for revenge. And Miss Annie started screaming.